1070. Legally Speaking with Pamela McCall and Michael Butterfield.
Good morning and welcome to Legally Speaking. Victoria family lawyer and mediator Michael Butterfield is here today, along with Victoria defense lawyer Mike Mulligan. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning and thanks for having us.
This Good morning.
This is an ugly one. A high-risk offender released from prison last year after serving a 22-year sentence for violent sexual assault has been charged with the murder of Surrey teenager Serena Vermeersch. First of all, how common is this kind of crime? Let's put that to you, our defense lawyer, to begin with.
Happily, quite uncommon. The reality of the criminal justice system is that most of the people that are involved with it aren't of this sort of long-term, serious, dangerous nature. There are relatively few people, in my experience, who fall into a category of being seriously dangerous. Those are the individuals that the justice system needs to focus its resources on. Unhappily, one of the trends that we've had over the past few years is a movement towards things like mandatory minimum sentences that causes us to, in some cases, waste resources on people who don't require them. Sending, for example, people to prison for growing six marijuana plants and focusing our judicial and police resources on matters like that rather than on seriously dangerous individuals like this person seems to be, in my judgment, is a mistake and puts the public at risk.
Should there have been more surveillance on this fellow?
In retrospect, obviously that appears to be the case.
What does the law allow for?
Well, we have no shortage of legal tools. The politicians are quick to say that they can provide some solution by amending the criminal code. In my judgment, that's not the problem here. The maximum penalty for the offenses this man was originally convicted of is life in prison. We have provisions in the criminal code where you have a pattern of dangerous behavior for a determination that somebody is a dangerous offender, which means that they would serve an indefinite period of time in the penitentiary. And we also have tools in the criminal code that are proactive ones, including a section called 810.2, where if the police have a concern that somebody is likely to, or if they have reasonable grounds to believe that somebody is likely to commit an offense involving serious injury to someone, they can obtain an order from a provincial court judge, which can include conditions such as electronic monitoring, reporting, whatever might be suitable in order to minimize the risk. The challenge isn't one in terms of what the law allows for. The challenges are ones which are based on things like resources. The police can surveil somebody like this. There are capacities to obtain the sort of orders required to do even the sort of things
they
I
could have
mentioned.
Been watching him.
If they have the resources to do that, it's a matter of what are we going to focus our efforts on? Are we going to spend our time chasing around people growing marijuana in their basement? Or are we going to focus police resources on dangerous sexual offenders?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And in June of 2013, when he was released, Surrey RCMP issued a warning to the public about him, calling him a high-risk sexual and violent offender. Who has maintained, this is quoting, a varied pattern of offending, having offended both violently and sexually in both an opportunistic and impulsive manner. What goes on with these releases? And Mike, let's bring Michael Butterfield into this as well. What goes through the minds of the public when we have these warnings issued? You think, well, what are we going to do about it?
Well, these warnings are very, very important because they do let the community know what is going on. But what I think it comes down to is the number of offenders that are like this. And this was an individual, and when he appealed to the Court of Appeal in 1993, who actually increased his sentencing on some of the counts, when he appealed, the court found at that point in time that this was an individual who for whom the treatment was a bleak outlook. So this was an individual who we have in a system, we incarcerated for the maximum amount of time that we could in terms of his sentence. There was no early release, no parole, nothing like that. He served the 22 years. Now, as Mike indicated earlier, he could have been sentenced to life on the robbery counts. However, the robbery counts were minor counts compared to the sexual assault counts. And the sexual assault counts only carried unlawful confinement, maximum sentence at that time was 10 years, and sex assault with a weapon was 14 years. So he was at the high end of the tariff, and the court system gave him an appropriate sentence. The question is, what do we do with these people? Because eventually they do get out. And unless you can go for dangerous offender status, they will eventually get out. So we talk about resources. Mike brings up a really good point, which is that quite often the politicians focus the resources on what's going to be the most advantageous in terms of soundbite. They want to sound like they're being tough on crime. We have the mayor of Surrey who... in a press release stated that the police could not legally have surveilled this person on a 24/7 right. basis. And that's simply not true.
Right. So we're hearing that from you guys right here.
Yeah.
I mean, she's saying it's we don't have the means or the legal capability to have watched this guy who has now murdered a Surrey teenager. And what you guys are saying is, oh, yes, she does.
And what's interesting about her is that the resources are governed by the police department, and that's the RCMP in Surrey, which is contracted by the City of Surrey and is administered by the police committee. And the chair of the police committee is, in fact, Mer Watts. So she was in the best position a year ago to have effected some change in regards to this. Earlier this year, the police committee, and I think it was the May meeting, had talked about increasing the number of officers in Surrey by 93 over the next 5 years. These are steps that could have been taken ahead of time to make sure the resources were on the ground to tighten up the surveillance of these poor sorts of people. But as Mike says, the political will isn't there.
Well, let's get back to what Mike Mulligan said as a defense lawyer. If they have the legal capability to do this, then why can't they decide with their resources to not go after the, you know, the pot growers? Isn't that not a police decision in the distribution of their capabilities?
That's true. There are difficult decisions to be made. Resources are finite, and we need to decide how we're going to allocate them. Are we going to have police out conducting roadblocks to stop people believed to be driving while they're impaired? Do we wish them to be downtown dealing with nuisance drug offenses? Do we want the police to be investigating allegations of spousal assault? Or do we wish to have them spending their time surveilling high-risk sexual offenders? Those are not easy choices. The problem isn't...
Seems pretty straightforward now with the murder of a 17-year-old girl.
And that's the beauty of hindsight. I mean, it's always easier to sit here and say, if only we did this, this, and this, then we wouldn't have the problem we have right now. But one of the points Mike made earlier was that these individuals are a very, very small proportion of the offenders. We can do better. We should do better. But going and spending... Our decision has to be where we want to put the resources.
How could this fellow have been surveilled? What was possible in terms that didn't happen?
Well, I mean, in terms of surveillance, the police are free to conduct surveillance of somebody if they wish to allocate their resources in that fashion. There are also some special provisions of the criminal code, one of which I mentioned, 810.2. That's a provision that allows the Crown Police to make an application to a judge to have a person... put on conditions to prevent them from committing a future offense.
So that would have had to happen in the courts.
It would involve the Crown bringing an application in court to put the person on a recognizance. If police had these sort of concerns that somebody is likely to be a dangerous sexual offender, they could make a report to Crown Counsel, who could bring the matter to court and have the judge, if the judge was satisfied that there were reasonable grounds to believe that was so.
Why would that not have happened? I mean, I read the Surrey RCMP warning to the public in June of 2013 about this guy. So if that's the case, if the Surrey RCMP see fit to release that, this guy is dangerous. Why did a judge not see that?
Well, a judge couldn't do anything proactively. It would involve the police making a report to Crown and going to court and asking that the person be put on conditions.
This is after he's been let out.
That's after you've completed your sentence. It's a provision designed to prevent a future problem.
Gotcha.
So you could have the person report. You could even have the person wear an electronic monitoring bracelet if a judge was satisfied that was required to keep the public safe.
But so under what grounds would the RCMP, would he have to what behavior would he have to manifest in order for RCMP to go back to the courts and say, this guy's a problem?
The Crown would need to satisfy a judge that there were reasonable grounds to believe that a person was going to commit a serious personal injury offense. You can imagine the sort of evidence would include things like institutional reports concerning their behavior, psychiatric assessments that would have been prepared while the fellow was in jail for 22 years. If the police have the grounds to issue a press release, it seems to me there's probably some basis to have a concern. I also don't know how much benefit those sort of press releases are, frankly. What am I to do in my daily life when a press release or there's a story in the newspaper about a dangerous sexual offender? How am I supposed to conduct myself in a different fashion?
Michael Butterfield.
And I think one of the points that was made on one of the TV news channels this morning, they had a forum, a police officer who in the Vancouver area, there had been, I believe, 14 of these announcements to the general public, including this fellow. Now, of those 14, he is the only one who has reoffended to their knowledge. So the reality is that a lot of these individuals who may be high risk when they are released, they do not reoffend.
But you can understand the public. A 17-year-old girl has been murdered. You know, and it's so those stats, and I give them their due, as you are doing, but then people think, wow.
And that's the emotional reaction, and that's why we generally don't allow victims of crimes to be the judge and jury, because there is an emotional reaction there. Within the rule of law, we say that crimes are punishable by sentences. Once an individual has completed that sentence, if they are no longer posing a risk to society, then they get to live their lives.
But I go back to this point, though. If they're no longer posing a risk to society, I understand that. But then why issue a warning to people that this you know, high-risk sexual and violent offender who has maintained a varied pattern of offending, having both offended violently and sexually in both an opportunistic and impulsive manner? Why is this
guy? I think it's worth bearing in mind that warning was issued a year last June. So this individual has not come up on the radar, to our knowledge, in that period of time. Now, if you had a surveillance team on him 24/7, a special OS, which is the special observers for the RCMP, they run surveillance teams of 4 to 12 people, 24 hours a day. Can you imagine the resources that would be sucked up just to watch this guy for 1.5 years until he commits an offence? It becomes a virtual impossibility. The reality is we would like as a society to believe that we can predict this sort of behavior. We'd like to believe as a society that we can protect ourselves from these individuals. The reality is, though, we cannot. And there will be always these individuals who slip through the cracks.
Stay with us here on Legally Speaking. More on this disturbing case when we come back.
Call us 250-386-1161. Or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
This program is brought to you by Rock Bay Footwear for orthopedic and custom-made footwear.
Win free groceries for a year with the CFAX 1070 Great Grocery Giveaway. Watch for Adventure Al Farabee to reveal the Thrifty Foods product during CTV News Vancouver Island.
Remember that item.
And listen the next weekday morning at 7:15. You could win a $50 Thrifty Foods smile card and free groceries for a year. Win with Terry Moore afternoons at 4:15. The CFAX 1070. The Great Grocery Giveaway from Thrifty Foods and CFAX 1070.
The Victoria Royals home opener against the Kamloops Blazers is Friday night at 7:05 at the Save-On Foods Memorial Center. The first 1,000 fans will get free Save-On Foods gift cards, some loaded with up to $500 credit. Plus, Save-On Foods and Capital Iron will fire up the barbecues with a free pregame snack. Saturday night is game two with magnet schedules for the first 3,000 fans, courtesy of VictoriaHomes.com. Trusted local professionals saving families time and money. Get tickets at VictoriaRoyals.com. Victoria Royals Hockey. We are Royal Blue.
The source is the place for I want that. When you said, I want a new smartphone because I've dropped my current one 1,000 times. Who had all the best brands? The source. And when you said, I'm going to need a great case because I'm probably going to drop this one 1,000 times too. Who had it? The source. Get great smartphones and all the essentials. Plus, trade in your current phone for a new one and get up to $200 in source gift cards. The source. I want that.
Clear the aisles. The Air Miles Reward Program has landed at Thrifty Foods. Earn one Air Miles Reward Mile for every $20 in purchases. Plus, only Thrifty Foods has better bonus days to help you earn even faster. You can also redeem for free groceries. Just activate your Air Miles cash balance at airmiles.ca and redeem 95 Air Miles Reward Miles for $10 in free groceries right at the till. Terms and conditions apply. Visit airmiles.ca or see in store for details.
When you hear Island Muffler and Brake, what do you think of?
Those guys probably know the way around mufflers and brakes.
Sure, but did you know they do all repairs on all cars and trucks?
I guess not.
From a simple oil change to a major overhaul, Island Muffler and Brake does great work in good time at a reasonable price, and they've been doing it for over 46 years. Same local owners, same location at Burnside and Douglas. Have Island Muffler and Brake Auto Care take total care of your vehicle.
Island Muffler and Brake.
Bolin Books Hillside Center is Victoria's community bookstore, bringing you the best books from around the world for more than 35 years. This week at Bolin Books.
In her first epic romantic novel since The Thornbirds, Colleen McCullough's Bittersweet is a sweeping story of two sets of twins, all trained as nurses, but each with her own ambitions, stepping into womanhood in 1920s and 30s Australia.
Bolin Books, Victoria's community bookstore in Hillside Center. Call the Bolin Book line at 595-READ.
You want comfortable shoes that take your pain away, but comfort's not enough. They need to be well-made and stylish. And when you go to get fitted, it better be close by. Only one place ticks every box. Rock Bay Footwear. Orthopedic footwear, handcrafted on-site in Victoria by professionals. One more thing. If you want elegant custom-made shoes or boots that aren't orthopedic, Rock Bay Footwear does that too. Book an appointment today. Beautiful, handcrafted, right here in Victoria. RockBayFootwear.com.
Living life to the fullest. Lifestyle with Patty Mack. Saturdays at 1 on CFAX 1070. Legally Speaking with Pamela McCall and Michael Butterfield.
My guest this morning, Victoria family lawyer and mediator Michael Butterfield, and along with Victoria defense lawyer Mike Mulligan. We're talking about the high-risk offender who was released from prison last year after serving a 22-year sentence for violent sexual assault. He's been charged now with the murder of a Surrey teenager. Let's get to the phones here and some listener comments. Hi, Gary. You're on CFAX.
Thank you. I wonder, when Michael Butterfield said, gee, do you know how much it would cost to have him under surveillance, I wonder what the cost of that victim's life is. And another question is, why do we not have the three strike rule like they have in the States, that if you've offended three times, you're done? I was listening one time, and some guy had been up charged with burglary 57 times. I mean, our legal system is a joke. It's a revolving door. The police arrest them. They get out. They get a slap on the wrist. They go out and reoffend. I don't know how many times this guy was offender or arrested, but that family is just decimated, and because this guy, it was right in the report, he was likely to reoffend. I mean, come on, guys, open your eyes, wake up.
Thanks for your call, Gary. Let's put this to Victoria defense lawyer Mike Mulligan. Three strikes and you're out.
They've been tried in the United States. They're essentially a failure. It's a good sound bite, but the trouble is you wind up, as I mentioned earlier, wasting resources on people that don't require them, so that we don't have the resources to focus on people like this man. We have in Canada a dangerous offender provisions. Those doesn't even require three strikes. If you could satisfy a judge that there's a pattern of conduct of this sort of serious offending, a person can be sent to prison indefinitely. That means you do not get out. So there's no shortage of legal authority to do something. But if we succumb to the siren song of things like three strikes laws, we wind up spending our police and judicial and parole and prison resources doing things like jailing pot growers and people involved in activity that's not a general threat to the public. And we're not focusing our police and other resources on serious problems like this man.
Paul writes in to that effect. He asked if the guests could comment on what types of crimes would warrant the dangerous offender designation where the guilty party is never released, i.e. Paul Bernardo. Was this individual in Surrey not close to that designation?
You would imagine that that would have been a consideration here. Serious sexual or violent offending would be the sort of offenses that would lead to that sort of a designation. Here, the sentence imposed wasn't a light one. He was sentenced to 22 years, some indication that the judge took what he did previously very seriously. And as I mentioned, there are provisions that allow for the continued monitoring and restriction of behavior of individuals like this. It just requires an application to a judge to impose them.
Well, that brings us back to the point of Surrey RCMP issuing a news release in June of 2013 warning people about this guy, Michael Butterfield. Is that not sufficient to go back to a judge and say, we're concerned?
Well, the reality is this, or the question that we should be asking is, if the RCMP was so concerned that they would issue that sort of notice to the public, why did they not take the next step of applying for some sort of 810 restrictions on this individual?
Mm-hmm. Okay, lots of comments pouring in here to Facebook. Shannon writes, this is so tricky. On one hand, you serve your time, you should be free. On the other hand, if you're likely to reoffend, then public safety trumps your right to freedom. We have the technology to keep tabs on people. And I think we're hearing that emotion here from people.
Well, we do have the technology. I mean, the ankle bracelet is one of the examples. But if you have an offender who is bent on reoffending, that is not going to stop them in the same way as a court order or a piece of paper is not going to stop them. They will simply remove the monitoring device. So at the end of the day, there are going to be people out there who the criminal justice system has dealt with, have now been released, and are high-risk offenders.
And should they not be monitored then? I mean, Mike, it's a matter of resources and allocating those resources or new resources.
Well, both of those can be considered. In my judgment, the criminal justice system ought to be used generally with restraint. We ought not to be spending our time and resources jailing people that aren't a danger. We're unfortunately going in the wrong direction.
But whose choice is that?
Much of that is a political choice by the current federal government. They've decided to focus on things like mandatory minimum sentences, which means that when a judge looks at somebody and says, look, in this person's circumstance, this person is not a risk.
But who dictates the RCMP's action?
Well, the RCMP, to some extent, is going to be bound by those political decisions. When you've got the federal government currently imposing things like mandatory minimum sentences, so we waste our resources on people that aren't violent and dangerous.
So the commander of the Surrey RCMP detachment, then, is kowtowing to the federal government?
Well, I mean,
can't you use his common sense and say...
No, you need to recognize that police departments, particularly ones that are contracted in like the RCMP, they have a term of reference and they have a service plan that is approved by the civilian oversight, which is the police commission. In the same way as in Victoria, our police commission sets priorities and approves operations for the police department. So it's within the police commission, which is a political body and made up primarily of the council of Surrey, where these decisions are to be made. Now, the question is, and there was an earlier caller who had commented upon me equating the cost of surveilling this individual to the value of the person who's been lost. I'm not doing that. I'm certainly not doing that. I'm saying in a perfect world, we would be able to surveil these individuals 24/7 and protect other individuals in the future. We're not in a perfect world. We have to set priorities. And I find it very frustrating as an officer of the court and somebody who works in this system when I hear politicians who had the ability to make the decisions that would have protected this individual who come out and make incorrect statements about what they can and cannot do.
You're talking about the mayor of Surrey, Diane Watts.
Absolutely. I'm talking about the mayor of Surrey. She is wrong when she says that the police could not have surveilled this individual 24 hours a day. She was in the position a year and 6 months ago when this individual was released, when this report went out in the media, she, as the head of the police commission, could have said to the police department, this is a priority for us. These serious offenders are a priority for us. We want to see the resources going in that direction. Mm-hmm. She did not. And now what you're seeing is politicians using this tragedy as fodder for their election campaigning. I think that is wrong.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we initially put out the question to CFAX listeners, should should police be allowed closer surveillance of sex offenders released from prison, but considered high risk to reoffend? And what the two of you have explained to us is the powers are already there.
And you see this a lot in the legal, in the political side of the legal system, is governments like creating new powers because it looks like they're doing something, when we have a lot of powers within the system already that are not being utilized.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next time an RCMP release comes out saying a high-risk sexual offender has been released, how should people react to that?
Well, one question they might want to be asking is, where is your court application to monitor that person? And how are you choosing to allocate your resources? And how much of our time are we spending chasing people around and jailing people that aren't a risk when we should be focusing on individuals like this?
Mm-hmm. So next time people come across a notification, they're within their rights to query, you know, what's happening with the resources here? What are you focusing on? And why is it now my issue to deal with a high-risk sexual offender?
That's a valid point. I mean, the question becomes this. Simply, okay, you've told me about this high-risk individual. You're the police force. What are you doing to protect me? And that question doesn't get asked. The police forces cannot simply say, hey, we put out a warning. We did our best. They have to show what steps they're taking.
Well, it's a sad case indeed, and it's cost a 17-year-old teenager her life, but hopefully some good will come from this, and I greatly appreciate the two of you coming in to walk through this with all of us today.
Thank you.
All the best to you. Victoria family lawyer and mediator Michael Butterfield, he's our regular guest on Legally Speaking, and thanks so much to Victoria defense lawyer Mike Mulligan for coming in and giving us some insight into this particularly disturbing case. Coming up in news, British Parliament is being recalled to deal with an uprising of Islamic militants. James Gardner's next.
CFAX Victoria, a division of Bell Media. This is Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
What